you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, September 16th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The contentious issue of succeeding the late Vice President John Landankomo is threatening to further divide ZANU-PF in Matabeleland following reports that four former PF ZAPU officials are now in the race.
Yet, honestly, if they want to claim to be citizens in Zimbabwe, they also have a right to claim and to fight for position number one. But you can see they are really trying to kill each other for position number two. That itself tells us something about their mindset.
A pressure is mounting on the international community to deploy more resources to combat the spread of Ebola, which has killed more than 2,500 people.
The emphasis here is really to prevent. I think this is the main thrust. Obviously, we are also taking a contingency plan that just in case it does come, and we really hope it doesn't.
And a measure banning the importation of a number of goods, including agricultural produce, that took effect yesterday splits public opinion, with some warning it will trigger shortages and price hikes. The contentious issue of succeeding the late Vice President John Landankomo is threatening to further divide ZANU-PF in Matabeleland following reports that four former PF ZAPU officials are now in the race. According to an unwritten clause of the 1987 unity agreement between ZANU and PF ZAPU, a former ZAPU member is supposed to be one of the two vice presidents. But there are some in ZANU-PF, like Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, who say the unity accord is now history and the two vice presidents can come from either party. A few weeks ago, the names of those said to be vying for the position had ballooned to 10, but the figure this week whittled down to 4 after some heavyweights from the region, including Transport Minister Obed Mpofu and former Higher Education Minister Sikanyiso Ndlovu, opted out and endorsed Chairman Simon Kayamoyo. The other three people who have thrown their heads into the ring are Politburo members Nyson Kutchwekayandlovu, Phekezela Mpoko, and Home Affairs Minister Kembo Mohadi, who all claim to be the most senior former PF ZAPU members. The ZANU-PF Bulawayo Provincial Chairman Nyson Ndlovu told the Zimbabwe Mail that the Provincial Coordinating Committee will be meeting this weekend to come up with a single name that will be presented to the party at its Congress in December. Political commentator Morris Ngwenya, who is also a ZANU-PF member, tells Studio 7 the jostling for the vice president's position does not show confusion in the party, but democracy.
Well, those four names, as you can tell, are names that are being suggested by people either within or outside the party, and that is a clear sign that there's indeed democracy about ZANU-PF processes. People are free to discuss whatever they think or whatever they wish, and if they follow the channel, I think at the end of the day, their wishes may be granted if they follow the party structures. But at the moment, in terms of names, well, really, that is a clear sign of democracy. But we are way to hear from our seniors, from our leaders, from our elders, those who have been in ZAPU before independence, and those who are in ZANU-PF right now, to guide us accordingly, because they are the ones who know better how to lead this country, and they are the ones whom we look upon to guide us in dealing with this issue.
And that was political commentator Morris Ngwenya, who's also a ZANU-PF member. We also reached Brilliant Mhlanga, a political scientist and a lecturer at Westminster University in England, who says the jostling for the position of vice president without regard to seniority in the party shows that there's no longer any unity accord between ZANU and PF ZAPU.
What we're seeing now is a very clear case of lack of proper structure and ordering in terms of who is senior and who is junior, as we would have expected. Because we knew ZAPU as a liberation movement had a clearly defined structure in terms of ordering which would have clearly helped these people to define who qualifies to lead at any given time. But now, that itself shows us that that structure is no longer there because ZAPU pulled out.
Assuming that one of those people mentioned as being in the race for the vice presidency wins, how do you make of ZANU-PF support in that region?
Well, it doesn't make much difference even in terms of bringing about development and bringing about change in the region. The honest truth is that we have had Joshua Nkomo himself there, heading quite a very strong portfolio in ZANU, but still he died and left the region poor. And we had John Nkomo. They both left the region in a state of underdevelopment. Yet, honestly, if they want to claim to be citizens in Zimbabwe, they also have a right to claim and to fight for position number one. But you can see they are really trying to kill each other for position number two. That itself tells us something about their mind.
That was Brilliant Mhlanga, a political scientist and lecturer at Westminster University in England.
Pressure is mounting on the international community to deploy more resources to combat the spread of Ebola, which has killed more than 2,500 people, half of the more than 5,000 people infected by the virus, and the toll has doubled in the last month. The World Health Organization says the outbreak will require $1 billion, calling the health crisis, quote, unparalleled in modern times. Responding to the outbreak today, U.S. President Barack Obama announced that Washington would deploy more than 3,000 troops to Monrovia, Liberia. The U.S. has also committed more than $100 million in the effort to combat Ebola. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will launch a global response coalition in New York tomorrow.
In the SADC region, only the Democratic Republic of Congo has so far been affected. Zimbabwe Health Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa has been coordinating efforts to combat the spread of Ebola in his capacity as the regional health chairperson. Zimbabwe is the current SADC chair. Dr. Parirenyatwa tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that regional ministers are vigilant.
I think you see the emphasis here is really to prevent. I think this is the main thrust. Obviously, we are also taking contingency plans that just in case it does come, and we really hope it doesn't. We really, really hope it doesn't. So to really hope, we must put enough contingency prevention plans. And this is what we have done in terms of our SADC screening that is happening all over the region.
Have you mobilized enough resources to curb the disease should it spread? How have you been working with the international community?
I think we for an example, here in Zimbabwe, our partners have really come in full force to assist in terms of resources, certainly in terms of communication resources and publicity resources. And generally, they are willing to look at what else we need. WHO is coming very strongly with protective clothing, which is really quite needed. So we've got protective clothing, which is important. And partners have come in. They know it affects everybody, and they've come in very strongly. We as governments also have put our preparedness at alert, and government has allocated certain funding to each one of the countries. There is no yet pooled funding for the region, but this has been mooted. We've talked about it. But generally, we are encouraging individual countries for now, especially in terms of just preparedness, to look at their own country resources and mobilize partners and governments.
What else, apart from setting up those clinics, are you doing to screen people who are coming into the country?
Well, what we are doing is, if you come to our international airport, the screening that is done is mostly to get your history, where you're coming from. If you're coming from any one of these six countries, including Nigeria and Senegal, we then monitor you for the next 21 days.
That was Health Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Meanwhile, a researcher in the Oxford University's Department of Zoology, Nick Golding, has predicted that 15 countries in Africa are at risk of animal-to-human transmission of Ebola by virtue of their geographic location, as animals carrying the virus are being eaten in these countries. The countries are Nigeria, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Ghana, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Angola, Togo, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Mozambique, Burundi, Equatorial Guinea, Madagascar, and Malawi. The university made the revelation in a model published in the journal eLife, which takes a look at the most likely explanation that Ebola's animal reservoir, fruit bats, could spread the disease in the animal kingdom and to humans through the dense forest that span 22 countries on the continent.
A measure banning the importation of a number of goods, including agricultural produce, that took effect yesterday has split public opinion, with some warning it will trigger shortages and price hikes. The ban covers cement, milk and potatoes, among other products. The government argues the ban aims to protect local manufacturers. While some are happy with the move, critics warn it might spark price increases and shortages. Plumtree villager Difa Dube is one of them.
Personally, as a Zimbabwean, I do support the business in our country. But I think at this time, the government has taken very, very harsh steps for them to install the ban for the citizens not to be able to access cement from the neighboring countries. They should have looked into this thing into more in depth, because I think there are so many things which involve the quality of the cement that's needed and the quality of the cement that's not being needed. So if there is a fake cement which is being sold in Botswana, it is for the government who should install rules and regulations. That kind of fake cement shouldn't be allowed into our country. But I believe that it's not only the fake cement that's being sold from the neighboring countries, but there is also the quality cement, exactly the same from the cement that's being found in Zimbabwe. They should have looked on both aspects and see that which is best and which is not best. So ban those things which are not tangible to be for the use in our country. But they shouldn't just put rules and regulations and say, let's just stop everything within 48 hours.
Difa Dube is a Plumtree villager. He spoke with Studio 7's Tungamile Nkomo. For perspective, we reached economic analyst Masimba Kuchera.
On the surface, I think the ban, especially of agricultural products, is a good thing when you look at the Zimbabwean context. But the challenge that we have is that we have a lot of new farmers whose production of some of these items leaves a lot to be desired. It can, therefore, create a gap in the supply of some of these commodities, and that may force price increases or force shortages. So when you look at it, I think the intention is good, but I'm not sure if either the timing or the very big number of things on the import ban could be the government's undoing in terms of that. So what needs to happen? I think not only looking at cement or these other things, if we are going to be able to boost local industry, what we need to do is to capitalize it so that they replace archaic machinery and machinery that is now not functioning to capacity, long worn out machinery with new machinery that can bring the cost of production down.
That was Masimba Kuchera, an economic analyst. He spoke from Harare with Studio 7's Ntungamile Nkomo.
Most women's rights activists have welcomed the implementation of the cancer prevention program in Zimbabwe, which is expected to benefit 9,000 young girls in Marondera and Bedbridge by year 2015. They have also expressed hope that it would eventually be accessible to all girls throughout the country. Officially launching the human papillomavirus vaccine yesterday in Dulubadzimu Stadium in Bedbridge, Health Minister Dr. David Parenya Twa said the high cervical cancer burden is fueled by the ongoing HIV epidemic, and called on stakeholders to disseminate information to ensure the successful implementation of the program. He added that 10 other African countries are currently implementing a similar program.
The Cancer Association of Zimbabwe's Health Services Manager, Patience Nyemba, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye her organization is happy the government is taking cervical cancer seriously and introducing programs that will save lives.
It's a good starting point. Vaccinating children is just a way of protecting them, just like we do with measles injections, BCG, protect other viruses which can affect children. So we're happy that the government has launched this program, and we hope people will be able to take it as the way it has been set out for them to have their children vaccinated against the HPV virus.
What is the benefit of getting the virus at 10 years for the girls? Because there was outrage over the age at which the girls are getting the HPV vaccine.
Maybe the main noise was because they're saying children are not sexually active or what. But the issue is what we're trying to do is get the vaccine, protecting the girls before they start to have intercourse so that they'll be protected from the virus, sexually transmitted. And it's been found that some girls are starting to have sex as early as 10, 11 years old. So that's why they've targeted the 10-year-old group.
That was Cancer Association of Zimbabwe's Health Services Manager Patience Nyemba on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Public hearings on the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt assumption bill continue, with most Zimbabweans saying they should not be forced to repay debts that benefited some individuals who accessed the various schemes when the central bank engaged in quasi-fiscal activities at the height of hyperinflation in 2008. Bulawayo residents told the parliamentary public hearing session today that the people who benefited from agricultural input schemes and other activities spearheaded by the RBZ and ZANU-PF should pay what they owe without burdening the taxpayer. The state is set to take over the bank's debts incurred during the hyperinflationary period if the bill is passed into law. The RBZ owes private companies, NGOs and other millions of dollars it appropriated to allegedly keep hyperinflation at bay. Indications are that some of the debts, including $40 million owed to Mikos, cannot be accounted for.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Apex Council meets tomorrow to discuss the plight of the country's civil servants.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Nigerian military authorities say they have sentenced 12 soldiers to death by firing squad for attempting to kill their commanding officer during a mutiny in the country's northeastern region earlier this year.
Russia's defense minister is calling on his country to bolster its military presence on the Crimean Peninsula, while another top official accused the West of pushing the world toward a new Cold War.
And a powerful typhoon is bringing storm winds and heavy rainfall to southern China, prompting flight disruptions and evacuations.
Apex Council members will tomorrow meet to discuss issues affecting civil servants and Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa's midterm fiscal policy, which civil servants say contained nothing to improve their lot. Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundani says also on the table is the government's failure to honor its commitment to pay civil servants non-monetary incentives. Gundani tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the Apex will, after the meeting, ask the government for a meeting of the National Joint Negotiating Forum so they can present and further discuss their resolutions.
The Apex Council is going to be meeting tomorrow, and it will be meeting at the right time immediately after the midterm review policy statement that was enunciated by the Minister of Finance a few days ago. So one of the most important things on the agenda is to try to analyze what was presented by the Minister of Finance so that we find out from that presentation whether there is anything at all which is going to add value to the agreement that we have with government, which was signed in January.
There are some who are accusing the Apex Council of doing little to help the cause of civil servants. What's your reaction to this?
Yes, my reaction is that increasingly, us as Apex Council and as individual unions that form the Apex Council, we must step up and make sure that we give feedback to our constituencies. It is true there are still some pockets that fail to get our information on time.
That was PTUZ General Secretary, I beg your pardon, that was Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundane on the phone from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
But Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe General Secretary Raymond Majongwe says he feels that the Apex Council is not doing enough to help civil servants.
I think this meeting, we have been waiting for it for a long time. We've actually been putting pressure because without engaging and meeting as Apex, the power, the voice, and the value and the contribution of the workers who are civil servants will not be realized at all. This is why we are welcoming this particular development, and we hope that from the engagement of tomorrow, we will try to see a course that will take us to Kenan. Because one would be asking, why is it taking us long to simply go and interrogate the issues that we agreed with government? Issues around non-monetary incentives, issues around pensions, issues around debunching, issues around remuneration, issues around conditions of service, all these are issues that are outstanding. And one ordinarily would think if we were serious labor representatives, we would have by now come up with documents that take us to the government doorstep, making practical, realistic demands. But that is where we are lacking.
That was PTUZ General Secretary General Raymond Majongwe speaking with Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
The South African Home Affairs Ministry today postponed the introduction of new immigration requirements for children travelling in and out of the country. Speaking in Pretoria, South Africa Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba said the new regulations in line with Children's Act of 2005 and Pretoria's own international obligations are postponed until June 1st, 2015, after stakeholders highlighted challenges on the requirement. Under the regulations, children under the age of 18 traveling with a parent are required to produce a passport, an unabridged birth certificate, and written permission of the registered parent. Alternatively, a court order granting full parental responsibilities or a death certificate of the other registered parent on the birth certificate must be produced. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to Zimbabwe Community in South Africa Chairperson Ngabuto Mabena, who welcomes the minister's announcement.
We do welcome what the minister has said, and we hopefully these engagements that will then start between the minister and the other stakeholders until June next year will present a win-win situation for those that are affected by this regulation.
There are some who have already reported that they were failing to get through due to the issue of getting written permission. Will this birth certificate give it even more a harder time for people to come through with their children?
Our own experience is that it was taking longer to obtain, say, a written permission from the other parent if the parents were living separately, meaning if the one is in Zim, the other parent is in South Africa, it was always a challenge. But we also understood what the South Africans were fearing in terms of trying to arrest child trafficking. But we believe that if a child has a passport, in our view, there is really no need for an unabridged birth certificate as part of the requirement when a child is traveling.
Zimbabwe Community in South Africa Chairperson Ngabuto Mabena on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from South Africa.
Educationists have expressed mixed feelings over the government's plans to build more schools in the country to improve educational standards, with some welcoming the move and others saying the government should concentrate on improving the quality of education in existing schools before embarking on the ambitious program. Deputy Education Minister Paul Mavima recently said that the country requires an additional 2,000 schools to reduce the teacher-pupil ratio from the current one teacher is to 70 pupils to at least one teacher to 30 pupils. ZIMTA Chairman Sifiso Ndlovu tells Studio 7 his organization has been recommending the building of more schools to the government for quite some time now, adding the move would be enhanced by the recently introduced teacher capacity building program and improve the quality of education. However, former Education Minister David Coulthard, although acknowledging the need to build more schools, tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga more needs to be done first to revamp the education sector.
You'll find many government schools where the chemistry labs have completely collapsed, and that really needs to be the priority before we start going to build a whole lot of more schools. Likewise, there's no point in building schools unless you have teachers who can staff those schools. There's talk about the Chinese coming in to build our schools. The question I have is, why aren't we using Zimbabweans to rehabilitate our existing schools, which need painting, which need furniture?
What do you think would be the best area to concentrate on if the teacher pupil ratio is not of a major concern at the time?
The big question must be, have we got teachers who are motivated, adequately trained? Are they paid reasonably? And until we can answer that question positively, you can build as many schools as you like. Quite frankly, school buildings are secondary to a motivated teaching profession. For example, it's not just a matter of how much we pay them. The houses that teachers have, especially in rural areas, unbelievably bad. We are expecting teachers to live in squalor.
That was former Education Minister David Coulthard on the line from Bulawayo with Sitandekile Mhlanga.
It's that time once again, Sandy, where we read our listeners' mail, and today we got quite a lot of mail, and the first one is from Garikai, who says, thanks for news headlines updates. You're doing excellent work in informing the nation about what is taking place in Zimbabwe.
And we have an email that came in yesterday, Chris. A listener says, today is UN International Democracy Day, and this year's theme is engaging young people on democracy. And I'm happy to be a young member of a democratic institution where young people are allowed and have space to use their creative minds to bring a new narrative and leadership culture in Zimbabwe, Africa, and the world, where women are not used as political objects but be tool handlers to sustainable peace and sustainable development. This is the courage to act different.
And Felix Manyozo says, vendors are being harassed by the municipal police while they are trying to earn a living under this economic hardship. Is that the indigenous empower and employ, yet not even one job is being created?
We have from a listener who did not give us their name. They say, thank you guys for giving valid news. Can you check for us what is happening in Gweru, who Advantage Technologies, which is housed under Zimnat House, where workers are struggling? He says, please hide my ID.
And Elmon Mudenda says, how are you doing, people? Thanks for a good job you are doing. Greetings to all Binga councillors and staff at Binga Rural District Council.
That is Councillor Elmon Mudenda, hey. And we also have another one from Mr. Mungona. Chris, he says you are doing a good job. News the Chokwadi.
And this one is from Tonderai. He says, thanks, guys. Continue this edition of Good News Broadcasting. Only Studio 7 at the heart of everyone in Zimbabwe, even ZANU-PF followers.
Thank you very much. Please continue to send in those emails. Listeners, please continue to sending them to studio7@voanews.com so we can read your messages on air. The address once again is studio7@voanews.com. We will read some more emails tomorrow. Remember also to stay tuned for Live Talk today. We are talking about the parliamentary meetings where they are seeking your views on what you think about the RBZ bill to take over the debt that they incurred in 2008. That's a lot to talk about. So please join us at 8:30 p.m. Gibbs and Blessing will be waiting to talk to you.
And now a quick recap of today's top stories.
The contentious issue of succeeding the late Vice President John Landa Nguomo is threatening to further divide ZANU-PF.
Pressure is mounting on the international community to deploy more resources to combat the spread of Ebola, which has killed more than 2,500 people.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Sitandekile. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you all a pleasant evening and a very good night.